From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, the Spirit Seth speaks. Hey, by the way, happy birthday to Danny, a Coast to Coast listener from San Diego. Ellen and the Ark are thinking of you. Happy birthday, Danny. Well, something strange happening in China. Here's what's happening. Another explosion there. Not immediately known if anyone was killed or injured, but a massive explosion erupted in another chemical industrial zone late Monday night in China. The incident reportedly occurred in the eastern province out there. A dramatic video is circulating on social media showing a massive fireball, but I think that's the video from August 12th where at least 139 people were killed in a couple huge explosions there. Bottom line, something very strange is happening there. A New York Russian Orthodox mother has won the right to exempt her autistic son from getting the school-mandated measles, mumps, rubella vaccination after citing her moral opposition. The woman said she objected on religious grounds because of the MMR vaccine's link to the cells of aborted fetuses. The City Department of Education rejected her bid for exemption after questioning the sincerity of her religious beliefs during the summer and fall of 2013. But the mother, a Russian immigrant whose name was withheld under privacy laws, filed an appeal with the State Education Department there, and the commissioner sided with the parent and granted the student exemption in an August 3rd ruling. A sad story that we reported on last week when a young child was critically injured because of some brain-eating amoeba. Well, now that Texas teenager has died. This very rare brain-eating disease he got after swimming in a lake 70 miles north of Houston. The 14-year-old, he was a junior Olympian, an honor student, seemed to have contracted this disease after he went swimming on August 13th with his track team. This disease is caused by exposure to a single-cell organism, often referred to as the brain-eating amoeba. It is commonly found in warm, fresh water, such as lakes, rivers, hot springs, as well as some soil. It usually infects people when contaminated water enters the body through the nose. The organism is most commonly encountered in the southern United States during the summer when the temperatures, of course, are the highest. So far, 133 people are known to have been infected with it in the United States since 1962. Listen to this. Only three have survived. Wall Street ending lower on Monday and wrapped up its worst month since 2012 after comments from a senior Federal Reserve official heightened fears among investors of a potential U.S. interest hike in September. Investment advisor Catherine Austin Fitz with us. Catherine, it's only a matter of time. Rates have got to go back up, don't they?
Right. It's a tempest in a teapot. In fact, history of the stock market is 150 basis points or 1.5% a year is digestible by the stock market. So, I don't know what the Fed's going to do, but say they're going to raise it 12 to 50 basis points. I think the stock market's going to take it in stride. Now, the stock market, George, is way overdue for a correction. A correction is healthy.
It is, but I am just in shock, Catherine, that it's staying so strong.
Well, I'm not, because we're reengineering the entire economy to feed the stock market.
Yes.
I mean, if you look at the Obamacare is a reengineering of healthcare that essentially creates enormous monopolies for private companies in healthcare. We're in the process of doing the same for education. If you go through all the different sort of places that create middle class income in counties, you're basically seeing, you know, large corporations reengineering a tremendous amount. And of course, we have the commodities just plunging, George, which is tough for the commodity producers, but it's generally good for a lot of companies because energy is one of the biggest inputs.
Yeah, that's right.
It's going to be good for the consumer, too.
Are they ever going to pass it on to us, though?
Well, that's
not that good.
Well, gas has come down. And so I know it's tough for you guys out in California. You know, I always, when I drive back to Tennessee from California, you know, my cost of gas drops in
half. Well, I've got to ask you, I was in St. Louis for 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
Gasoline is so much cheaper there than in California. Why?
George, you know, it's certainly worth an investigative report, but
I've sure
really looked into it. The one thing I will say, you know, they're pushing hard. The oil industry now, with the prices down, is pushing hard to be able to export. And it will be interesting because I think they're going to get the clearance to do that. As we have to compete, you know, because the prices in Europe and China are much, much higher than what we pay. And as we globalize that price, it's gonna raise things a little bit here.
What are you telling folks at the Solari.com, your website?
Oh, I'm telling them I'm just about to do a Solari report called What's Up This Fall 2015. And one of the things I'm telling them is this is going to be an unbelievably intense fall in terms of finance and geopolitical. So under schedule. There's so many just people all across the country getting hit with what I call shadow work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's in Middle Tennessee, we just had 2 days of bomb threats at some of the schools. So you can imagine in a rural community, it's all the parents, all the, you know, everybody's time is completely overtaken by that, or, you know, people fighting property taxes all over the country. So you really have the American people having tremendous stress on their time for many different reasons, and that's what happens when you have this kind of change and this kind of poor leadership, let's face it.
Thanks, Catherine. Let me spell your website. It's solari.com. Research by the European College of Neuropsychology Pharmacology concluded that the behavior patterns precede many suicide attempts. Listen to this. The study said effective preventative measures were urgently needed. The World Health Organization estimates that more than 800,000 suicides worldwide back a few years ago. Study evaluated 2,800 patients suffering from depression, of whom 628 had previously attempted suicide. Researchers looked especially at the characteristics and the behaviors of those who had attempted suicide and found that certain patterns recur before attempts. I don't know how many of you have had friends that have attempted suicide or even contemplated it, but let me tell you, it is not easy on you, nor, of course, obviously them, but when you have to work with it or deal with it, you might as well know this story. They said the risk of an attempt was at least 50% higher if a depressed patient displayed these characteristics: risky behavior, such as reckless driving or promiscuous behavior, psychomotor agitation, such as pacing around rooms or wringing their hands, impulsiveness, defined by the researchers as acting with little or no forethought, reflection, or consideration of the consequences. I have no idea how they came up with that, but they say that people who display these behaviors, 50% higher, if they're depressed, to attempt suicide. Very sad story over the weekend. Coast to Coast guest and just one of the great guys, best-selling self-help author and motivational speaker, Wayne Dyer, has died. His family said in a post on his official Facebook account that he died on Sunday. He was 75 years old. I heard about it with producer Tom Danheiser as we were coming back from Denver from our Beyond Belief television taping. I couldn't believe it. Wayne has left his body, they say, passing away from the night. He always said he couldn't wait for his next adventure to begin. He had no fear of dying, his family said, but our hearts are broken. He was one heck of a guy. He'd been on our program numerous times.
In this day and age, with the financial situation as bad as it is, you know, the price of gasoline, people are getting foreclosed on, it's tough. It's tough to pull yourself up, self-empower yourself, and to try to be positive, isn't it?
No, I don't think so. I think that's a major mistake. It's one of the ways that people think, because if you know, you get what you think about, whether you want it or not, you know, and that's really one of the great important lessons I've ever learned in my life, is to really, really be careful about what you think about, what you project out there into the world. Because if you believe that it's tough, and you believe that things are going to go bad, and you believe that the economy is the reason why you're unhappy, and all of those kinds of things, then I believe that the universe will just offer you experiences that match up to those kinds of thoughts.
Wayne Dyer will be missed. He wrote more than 40 books and 20 New York Times bestsellers on the topic, like psychological self-improvement and spirituality. Now, Lisa Gard, talk show host for the National Public Radio's KPFK, and of course a fill-in host here on Coast to Coast AM, knew Wayne Dyer extremely well. Lisa, he is going to be missed.
It was so hard to just hear his voice. That's the Wayne that I knew and know, is that empowered, powerful voice. That was the voice that I spoke to a week ago. And I was as shocked as the rest of the world to hear that he had passed. He was in better shape than he said he had ever been in his life. Anyone who'd spoken to him said he was healthier and happier than he had ever felt. So the shock, and the shock.
Did the family, Lisa, ever disclose how he died?
There's no diagnosis officially yet. It was just that he died in his sleep.
Oh.
Yes.
And
I pray that my wish for him was that it was peaceful and that he ascended the way that he knew to ascend, that he is now with us everywhere. That is my belief, to be honest with you, because that's what I want to hold on to him as. And if he had to pass in order for his message to get even stronger, George, then so be it. He 2.5 million likes on that post right now that you just read from on Facebook. The one that there's another one the family posted last night with a beautiful quote from him that was so special. And he is just that person. He said, "We are not our bodies, our professions, or our careers. Who we are is divine love, and that is infinite." And that is totally, completely the way that I know him to be.
Lisa, thank you for sharing that with us. Really appreciate it. I got to tell you, every time that Wayne Dyer was on with me, he was so uplifting. I mean, I would get hundreds and hundreds of emails from people who say, "I was sad," or "I was upset before I, you know, turned on the program and I heard Mr. Dyer. And I feel good now," and he will be missed. And sadly, another Coast to Coast guest has passed on. Charlie Carlson, the author of a dozen Florida books about all kinds of great things happening in Florida, Florida's master of the weird, the strange, he has passed on. We just found out about that. And Wes Craven, the prolific writer-director who thrilled millions of people with his movies like Nightmare on Elm Street and Scream, made his name synonymous with horror. He has died. He was 76. We're losing a lot of people. NASA's New Horizons spacecraft has a new target to aim for following its historic flyby of Pluto. It's called 2014 MU69. It's one of two comet-like objects that were under consideration by scientists working on the mission. So we're going to get a little close-up look on that. A Bay Area man who found a $20 bill on the street outside of San Francisco's International Airport used the money to play the California lottery. Guess what? He won $1 million. What a great discovery. And in a moment, George Ure joins us. Talk about a great discovery. Him as one of our guests. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome to Coast, George, you're with us. George, of course, is a business consultant, financial writer, publishes the urbansurvival.com and the peopleomics.com. He's been a senior vice president of an international airline, a school president, a sales and marketing executive. His website, by the way, Urban Survival, focuses on long wave economics. And it's time to talk to George Ure. George, welcome back.
Thank you, George. Great to be back. I enjoy our chats a lot.
Oh, let me tell you something. Everybody's talking about September being a disastrous month. What do you think? What do you hear?
You know, there was a time in my life where I kind of got a little bit into the doom and gloom outlook. But at this point, I would have to agree with Catherine Austin Fitz, who is just on. I see that the market would be able to absorb a very modest rate hike. And as we go through a few things today, if you want to look at the urbansurvival.com website, I've got some diagrams and charts and so forth that you can kind of take a look at as we're talking. But I'm not terribly pessimistic about it. In fact, yes, it's always possible the market could fall apart. But there is a form of analysis called Elliott Wave analysis, which we can get into at whatever depth you want. But basically, that says that markets move in steps of either three or five. So you'll have one move up, a corrective move back, and then a final move up, or you'll do five moves. So it'd be like one down, two up, three down, four would be a bounce, and then five, finally you get the ultimate bottom. And the interesting thing about Elliott waves is you can count them regardless of where you're standing when you look at the chart. In other words, you can see it in a one-minute chart, you can see it in a 30-minute chart, you can see it in a five-day chart, and for the really long wave stuff, gosh, I've got charts of the Dow going back to the late 1800s, and you can see these same wave counts happening all the way back there. So where we are right now, to answer the question, which eventually I may do.
You'll get there. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Really, there are two competing Elliott wave counts right now. The one is that if you step back and you look at the low in 2009 and you match the low in 2009 with the market low in 1921, mm-hmm. which was the last market low before the market just went crazy from 1921 to September 3rd of 29. And if you match up the 2009 low with the 1921 low, what you find is we're right on track. In fact, it would be amazing to see it, but if the Fed gets their decision right on, I think it's September 16th, the Wednesday.
Wednesday interest rate discussion,
yeah,
right?
The interest yeah. rate discussions are due out then. And what happened was, oh gosh, I'm going from memory here, but I think it was their February, April, and July meetings in 1928, the Fed raised their discount rate. They went from about 3.5% up to, I think it was 5%.
Which was a lot then.
A huge amount. But as Catherine exactly was correct in pointing out, the market can deal with 150 basis points a year. And so when you see the market moving as they are, right now it's kind of like the market is lobbying the Fed. But the fact of the matter is that the bond market is where there is so much money parked right now. And the only way to get money out of the bond market, where it's just, I don't want to call it dead pools of capital because it pays a little bit of interest, the only way to get that money out is to pay more for it in the short term. And so rates going up will kill the bond market a little bit. I mean, the bond market's always going to
sure.
be there.
They might kill the housing market too, George.
No, not really. The housing market's in a bounce, and it's really due for a correction downward this fall anyway.
Yeah, but if people are skittish about buying houses, if the rates go up, they're going to be even more skittish, aren't they?
And yeah, but that's why I've been telling Peoplenomics subscribers that you got to have a different way of looking at today's economic picture. And I call it the franchise view. You know how sports franchises work, right?
That's right.
You buy a franchise from a league, and that gives you the exclusive rights to basketball or football in a market. But what's interesting to note is that franchise concept can be applied to so much else. It applies in the automotive industry. We've seen in car dealerships, in just about every major market, there's been what we would call a roll-up, where a name dealer will come in and they'll buy up multiple existing dealerships, and they'll literally build the car franchise in a market.
Yeah, that's true. That happens a lot in St. Louis.
So in Dallas, we've got the same thing going on. Sewell Motors, the Sewell I think it's Sewell Group LLC, S-E-W-E-L-L.
E-double-L, yeah.
Yeah, they've got the Lexus franchise, but they also have picked up like eight other brands. And so it's very, very smart because, you know, you can share and get economies of scale and so forth.
Well, that's right. Hold on, George. We're going to come back. We're going to talk more about how this affects all of us in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, here we are back. I am right back where I started. Little skip there, but you got the idea, didn't you? Hey, by the way, I'm getting lots of emails from folks who heard what I announced last week about ParanormalDate.com. By the way, sign up. It's up 22,000 members, free to sign up, because we're looking for success stories now, those of you who may have dated with each other. So what I'd like you to do is send that story to ParanormalDate@gmail.com, if you would. ParanormalDate@gmail.com, if you would. And those of you who haven't signed up for it yet, go to ParanormalDate.com because you are not alone. Okay, welcome back to Coast. George, you're with us as we talk about money and your finances and predictions of the future that can affect all of us. George, when you were putting together initially Urban Survival, what was the concept behind that?
Well, I was I guess what you'd call an aging executive. And I looked into the future and I saw this period coming where we would enter, for lack of a better term, a great uncertainty. And the reason I was talking about franchises and the rise of the franchise business model is because that's sort of where we are right now. And whenever the franchises become unclear or muddled in the public's mind, you expect to see big pullbacks in the stock market. I knew there was going to be a major pullback in the market. I expected that eventually, before I die, which hopefully will be many years in the future, we'll see things like collapse of retirement systems and literally back to a 1930s kind of an economy. And I'd say I've been half right on that, but terribly right in terms of timing of some of the major declines. In 2000, I called the top of the market. And sure enough, we got it. The market declined from March of 2000 down to the bottom in 2003. Then we poured on the money and no-doc loans, and we had the big, huge housing market rally. But what was interesting about the 2007-2008 period was when you look at it on an inflation-adjusted basis, we really have been in a decline from 2000, talking about Elliott wave theory, you can picture a one down wave from 2000 to 2003. You had a wave two bounce up to 2007, 2008. Then you had the wave three down, which was the big housing market decline. And now we're in kind of a large horizontal fourth wave, which should end with going down. Unfortunately, I don't like to say this, should end with us going down, but before we get down to those 2009 housing levels and lower, and a substantially lower stock market, if the Fed raises rates in September, there's a better than even chance, in my research, that money will come pouring out of bonds and we'll have one heck of a stock market rally.
Do you mean even more than it is that it's been?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Jeez.
I mean, you know, it is possible that the market could go to, and I don't want to, you know, sound like an idiot here, but, you know, 25 to 30,000 on the Dow.
Oh, that's almost double.
Yeah, yeah. But you, if you go, oh, this guy's crazy. Yeah, that's kind of a side issue. But if you look at the data, which is what I tried to do around here, the data says that when the Fed raised the discount rate in the spring of 1928, it actually caused a huge shift in investing. And the mechanics are obvious. The mechanics of it are, let's say you've got bonds and the 10-year right now is paying about 2%.
Which is not much.
Which ain't much. And so if you had $1 million of net worth in 1987 or 86, you could get $100,000 a year to live on. But in today's interest rate world, that's only a $20,000 income. So your $1 million of capital, that's why the money has been flowing so heavily into bonds, because it takes so much money. It takes, like, you know, 5 times as much to 10 times as much as was the case in, say, 1980, 82, when bonds were peaking.
Well, let me ask you this, George. We had a guest on named Jonathan Kahn. He's written a book of the Jewish Shemitah, as he calls it, as
yeah,
they
September
call it.
September 13th.
Okay. And he believes that we are in 7-year cycles of disaster. So he talked about 2001. Look what happened then.
Yep.
And then 2008. Look what happened right around then. And so he's predicting, based on this, that around 2015 September, here we are, that something big is going to happen again. So what if he's right and this hits the bottom, but then does what you said, and that is it takes off after a few years?
Yeah, and I think that's really the likely case. Remember that we have to distinguish between an emotional cycle, an emotional repeating sequence, and a directional economic action. In other words, you can have a major decline in 2001, major decline 2008, but there's something that says that when the emotional flip comes, that it doesn't have to necessarily be on the downside. Remember, stock markets are weird. They will go out of their way to make the maximum number of people lose money. Unfortunately, how it usually works out, right? So we've got all these things clustering. I mean, there's, I've been reading over the past couple of weeks about how there's going to be a nuclear this or that on September 8th, and then there's Shemitah coming up on the 13th, and the Fed on the 15th, and then there's something supposed to be on the 23rd of September, and of course the Nibiru crowd is back with, you know, something in October. And you just read all these predictions and go, yeah. But it also could simply be the fourth wave of a lesser degree completing, because when I look at it, again, standing back from the charts, I look at it as a five-wave Elliott move. And the five-wave Elliott is one down in 2001, two up into 2008, three down into 2009. Three down into 2009. No, I said that wrong. We just completed three. We're in four now, and then five is what happens after this fall. And so it can go up to 25,000-30,000, or it could drop like a stone, and we really could, you know, there are some people who do Elliott waves, like Bob Prechter. I don't know if you've ever had him on.
No.
Really, really a very good forecaster when it comes to cycles. And he thinks there's a chance that, yeah, this could really be the big one. But again, I don't think so, because there are so many indicators that aren't moving where they should be.
But you do think there could be a whip around.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. Like the S&P, I wouldn't worry about this being the big one until the S&P takes out 1740. And I'd have to look and see again what it closed at today. It was down, but more likely I'm thinking 1812 to 1820. In fact, I am so sanguine about it that my wife and I are leaving on a cruise Sunday for a week. With
1972 S&P.
Yeah. Okay, so 1972. So we could go down easily 100 points from here and still not take out the trend channel that's in place from the 2003 low and was also put in 2009. So when you draw these long-term trends, market corrections are really healthy things, because from the correction, you can get some incredible buys.
Let's just keep our cash underneath our pillows and our mattresses.
Well, that's really becoming the major question. How do you structure what little cash you have? I think we've all read about, you know, how the European Central Bank is doing roll-ups, that is to say acquiring other banks in the European area. The Cyprus Central Bank, basically, and the Greek Central Bank, which I think they'll end up buying it for on the order of $10 billion. And so you have all these roll-ups going on in these competing franchises, like the ECB is trying to get itself together. You've got BRICS. We've got the U.S. Fed. So we have all this competition. And again, as I said, when there's disarray at the franchise level, when people's expectations about the future aren't clear, you hit it on the head just so perfectly, George. Put the money in the mattress. and really, the smart, you know, I think the smart thing to do, and what I've done in our accounts, is I've set it up so that I can wire transfer with about a click from our banking accounts into our government treasury.
And back and forth.
Into treasury direct accounts. Because what ends up happening in a banking bail-in is the odds of the U.S. government basically stealing from people who have invested in savings bonds.
True. See, but most people today, George, need the cash.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
they can't tie it up.
We've talked about this. This is the rent-your-life world. Nobody has a lot of cash floating around. It's just expected. People today have student loans. You know, when you and I grew up, we put ourselves through school. And today,
well, I my dad helped me. I got it.
Oh, okay. But
thank God.
But basically, the deal back then was when you were 23, 25, and finally got that first degree. What happened? You went into the workforce and you actually did meaningful work. Today, you're lucky to find a job, and you've got the student debt.
You get a degree, and you might not be even in that field.
Exactly. And the problem gets worse because of the Internet. And I hate to harp on it, but I wrote a book a couple of years ago called Broken Web, The Coming Collapse of the Internet. And the thesis of that book, George, was real simple. The Internet seems like a really peachy cool thing, but it has provided for the export of jobs. We wouldn't be moving jobs overseas if we couldn't communicate orders, design changes, software implementations for all these outsourced IT outfits. All that stuff happens because of the Internet. And yeah, cheap communications is great, and it hasn't really bit yet. But when robotics come along, as they are, we've got serious problems of where are we going to find enough jobs for people.
Well, the Internet has killed most bricks-and-mortar retail stores. Mm-hmm. I mean, look what's happening to JCPenney and Sears and all that. If the Internet could teach you how to eat, restaurants would go out of business.
Oh, the Internet's already doing that. There's a lot of special, you know, we live out in the woods in Palestine, Texas. And a lot of the things that we consume, you know, specialty food stuff, we can't get any place but Amazon. And
they deliver right to your door.
Oh, sure, yeah. Sure. UPS delivers. And we, just a month or so back, picked up a new Alexa. Have you played with an Alexa yet?
I have not.
Oh, they're cool. They're a little round thing. Think of it as about...
You talk to it, right?
Yeah, you talk to it. And you can say, Alexa... And then Alexa will tell you what time it is. And
what does it do, though?
Oh, gosh.
I mean, does it turn on your TV and stuff?
Oh, it'll turn on your lights. When you're in the kitchen cooking, you can say, Alexa, timer, 3 minutes. And it's multiple timers. You can tell it, Alexa, shopping list, eggs. And it generates a shopping list for you. You can even tell it, Alexa, tell me a joke. And Alexa will answer with sometimes some pretty good
it
ones.
It talks back to you?
Sure.
What kind of a voice?
Female.
What
I mean, it's very much like Siri, except it's an Internet-connected Siri.
Huh.
And you can have, you can ask Alexa to wiki things for you, and she'll read you the first paragraph of whatever the Wikipedia
so
is.
So it's a little computer.
Yeah, but it's totally voice controlled. There's no screen. There's a setup that you can get to. Echo.amazon.com is the control panel for your device. And I actually talked to one of the Amazon engineers here a couple of months ago and said, you know, hey, here's a way that you could connect a network printer so I wouldn't have to go to my app. I could just say, Alexa, print grocery list. And if I, you know, Alexa's on a static network for us, so it would find the network-enabled wireless printer and print.
In your house?
In my house, on my wife's wireless printer, not mine in my office. And so that would be Alexa's default printer. So I could simply give the voice command, you know, print shopping list, or, and there's a to-do list. And so anything you want, you simply give the voice command, like, Alexa, to-do list.
So has Alexa replaced a person?
No, I still have a wife.
So far. Until they come out with Alexa, the wife.
Yeah, well, no. It's kind of drifting that way. I mean, Roomba, we have a Roomba.
She's probably staring at you right now.
No, hopefully she's asleep.
I'm talking about Alexa.
Oh.
No.
<okay. laughs> we've had one of those Roomba vacuum things. And so, yeah, robotics is coming home, and that's going to
That's that little round vacuum that just goes all over the place.
Yeah, and it bumps into things.
And moves.
And it picks up the cat hair and,
yeah.
You know, the potato chip that dropped on the floor and you're too lazy to bend over.
It finds it only because it goes everywhere, right?
It goes everywhere, yeah. And when it gets low, it goes back over and plugs itself in and charges.
No, it doesn't.
Well, yeah, George, this is technology.
What do you mean it goes back and plugs itself?
No, it doesn't do it. No. I'm teasing you. But that,
hey, I believe this stuff.
Yeah, it's going there. I mean, that's really just a matter of time. And I hate to sound like a sales and marketing guy because I've been the sales and marketing guy in technology companies. But, you know, the sales and marketing guy comes in and says, hey, we got this great idea for a cool feature, and it should only be a couple of lines of code. And now that we're getting things like Alexa and Siri so that the voice recognition and the understanding of the human engineering is right. But for example, when my wife and I are having breakfast in the morning, and one of the affiliates that carries Coast to Coast is, will simply say, Alexa, iHeartRadio, WOAI.
And there we are.
And there you are. And if I don't like their commercials, or I want to listen to a different city, I can say, Alexa, iHeartRadio, and then just name any call letters on iHeartRadio, and it pipes out of Alexa.
You mean Alexa plays the actual show?
Yeah.
So it's a radio, it's a computer, it's in everything.
It's in everything. I asked Alexa to, you know, Alexa, what's the weather in, show, you know, in Palestine? It's 95 degrees. Expect a low tonight of 75 and blah, blah, blah.
How big is this thing?
It's about 3 inches around and about a foot high.
That's all?
That's it. Is the speaker sound okay in it? I mean, you know, is it like the recording studio I have in the house? No. But is it perfect? Is it room filling sound? I mean, yeah. I mean,
that's bizarre. It's the bottom line here. Technology is just going crazy.
And that's what happened in the last depression. What happened, if you think back on it, that's when the big changer was beginning to appear, which was television. What's in it, you know, the Farnsworth and the infancy of television was happening in the 30s. And it became the display for radar, and then by the 1950s, it was black and white, and there were lots of shows, and the greats of comedy came along. And by 63, 64, my friend up the hill, he and his family had their first color TV. And, you know, so here we are, 13-year-old kids, doing, you know, Friday afternoon pizza and watching Twilight Zone.
Well, here's an unknown variable, George, and that is, what if there's a war?
And we all get EMP'd.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We've talked about that.
Well, pretty simple solution, really. I mean, all you need to do is anticipate where you can get the most survivability for your income and go buy it. The problem is most people don't look at the future strategically. They don't line up all the boxes of possibilities. Most people never even move from the city they're in. So people make their own future by either proactively deciding or, and it really determines your future by deciding not to do something. And so if you want to avoid the fallout, literally, from war, all you have to do is what we do. Put in lots of solar panels, grid-tied power system, huge battery bank.
Well, that's smart. I mean, what you're doing. George, stay with us. We're going to hit the break, but I want to come back because you're also talking about much more than money. You're doing something about dreams. So I want to talk with you about that, and we'll open up the phone lines next on Coast to Coast AM.